You know, our military, our Department of Defense, our NSA, NASA, I mean, they're all working on such amazing things, and eventually the public will be able to take advantage of all that innovation and technology.
Welcome back to another episode of Why Y'all Working. I am your co-host, Michael Ogusanya.
I'm Alair Jameson.
And we have an amazing episode today for you. Not going to waste any time. We have an amazing entrepreneurial director, ecosystem connector, a leader amongst many organizations, whether you think of manufacturing, law, and just overall social design. Amarji Kota is here, director of entrepreneurial services at BW Tech at UMBC, the alma mater of your very special co-hosts. Say hey, Amarji.
Hey, y'all. How are you?
Appreciate you joining today. Thank you. We wanted to kind of just highlight you as one of the connectors in the ecosystem, specifically because we want to check in on Baltimore, right? We've been saying it's coming up on a year now since Paula's passing, RIP, but we definitely wanted to make it more of a point to kind of check in with, you know, our network, our universe, and see what's kind of going on and what people are doing in the day-to-day. So we would love to start out like we do every single episode. Why do you work, and what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. One, to pay the bills, right? Two, because I get to meet amazing people. I am so fortunate to meet students, faculty, innovative people who have patents under their belt, scientific people who are solving real world problems. So I think that really moves me to go to work every day. No day is the same. So it's a lot of fun.
And so how have you, a year removed from tech CEO connector, Paula LaPere, her like unfortunate demise, untimely demise, we're all reeling. I got to spend a brunch with me, my fiance, and some friends, just getting to talk and relive some happy and funny and weird memories that we all share with her. How are you feeling and thinking through this process?
So I appreciate that. And thank you guys for having me on your show. You know, Paula was a unique person, no matter how you put it. She, whether you spent 5 minutes with her, or you were on a committee with her, or you were in her company with her, she was a leader that you don't forget. I mean, I was fortunate to work with you and she on a couple of different occasions, bringing in student entrepreneurs for lots of different events. And she was always someone who made everybody feel like they mattered. And that was Paula's legacy. That's her ability to really impact people. I miss her often. It's hard to process what happened. But I think Baltimore and the mayor, as well as Equitech Upsurge and what you guys are doing to reconnect with that memory, to know that she's not gone. I think that oftentimes I think about something and her name comes up, or, you know, we all look at what she's done with EcoMap, and it reminds me of that pioneer spirit, that innovative spirit that we all have inside of us. Otherwise, I don't think we'd be where we are today. But Paula is definitely somebody that I miss. I'm still processing it as a woman in the industry and as somebody who used to live downtown, and how open and friendly I am. It just, it's a lot to process, but I miss her, and I can't thank you guys enough, and everybody who constantly keeps her on the forefront of what we're doing, because she really did touch so many lives.
Absolutely.
No, appreciate that. And speaking about inspiration, she's one of my big inspirations, is just being an entrepreneur, kind of coming out and, you know, talking about what we do and how we do it, and making sure that there are doors being opened for other entrepreneurs. Can we talk about a little bit about, you know, who or what inspired you to do the things that you do today, and what you do within entrepreneurial services, and how you kind of ended up there? What's your story? We'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, that's a lot. But you know, when I think about who inspires me, it comes in so many different ways. And I have to go back to the definition of inspiration is really that feeling of enthusiasm, that excitement you get from somebody or something that you're working from, because otherwise we wouldn't do what we do, right? It just is, it's hard. It's not easy. It's challenging. It's you have to be very resourceful. But I think the ability to craft something, help somebody create something, help guide something, help open up new doors for somebody is something that I have inspired from other people, and they have taught me how to do that. You know, so being at BW Tech at UMBC, being in the position that I'm in, I get the opportunity, as I mentioned, to really touch so many people's life in their success in a very, very small way. I'm just one small piece of the cog. And whether it's connecting them to a resource that they need or to a resource that they need or a strategy or somebody that can help them move their business along, you know, it's no day is ever the same. It's kind of like Shark Tank on steroids sometimes is how I put it. You guys have lived it. So it's really an interesting thing. But, you know, the inspiration that comes from good mentors, good people in your lives, and just the drive and determination that you have because you've got that enthusiasm that inspires you. I have to look back at that every day. I love getting up to go to work. I love the people that I'm meeting. I just reconnected today with somebody I hadn't seen, and we didn't realize or remember that we saw each other through a Mica entrepreneurship event. So it was kind of like, wow, okay, life happens fast, and you have to remember all those little cogs in the wheel along the way.
Yeah, and I want to make sure we've had a lot of different guests, but you have extensive experience directly working, whether it's leading business development, leading sales and marketing, or just working directly with helping entrepreneurs uncover their truths. I mean, you're like they say, you're true to it. You're not new to it. And I love to tell a story. I think it was 2018, 2019. I don't even think mine, Stan, we had like a incorporation yet. But I met you at, I think it was like an Innovate Maryland event. And I had my notebook, my Moleskine notebook. I felt like, you know, so cool. And you invited, thank you. You invited me to, because I was in College Park for at the time. That was the summer, Alaire, that I was like driving from like Penn State back to Maryland because I had an internship at that time. And I just kept going back literally but you were willing to like find a time for me to meet up at Starbucks right on College Park. You sat down and you really like said, you have something really good here. And sometimes seeing someone get excited about your idea, especially being a young college student, can be the thing that's like, all right, you know, do I want to keep applying for jobs or I'm going to keep applying for jobs, but this is something that I can grow, you know, while I'm here. So well, thank you for that.
Thank you. Well, I remember as well that meeting because you're one of the first people I met in my new job. So it was kind of fun. I think I was at Harbor Designs. We were working with Pava at the time for the Innovate 8 conference, along with some other key people in the ecosystem. But I do remember your product stood out, but you were also the one who stood out. I always take the time to really look at the person presenting their idea and try to get a better idea because I was once in that seat too. I actually was starting with a new company, and within a couple of months of starting with this company, I was on my way to Africa to meet with the head of state in Guinea, as well as over in Cote d'Ivoire. And I was meeting prime ministers, ministers, the president, and I didn't even understand my value proposition. And I had mentors, ambassadors who sat me down, worked with me, because they also believed that we had a really cool product. And without them asking me these questions, I still remember there's some of the same questions I asked today. It really molded me in this entrepreneurial lifestyle that everybody needs somebody to help them and to help them be a little bit better. Not that that's my goal. My goal is to listen and see if I can help, because that's the way I am. It's just, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
But thank you for taking that meeting. It was at the coffee shop and I loved it.
Thank you for the free coffee.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. And speaking about like connection and, you know, kind of life stories kind of intermingling along the journey, what are the biggest life lessons or at least knowledge that you have today that you've kind of gained over your journey personally as a professional, young career, growing a family? How did you manage to do all of that? What has guided you throughout that process?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Alaire. So I grew up in a Navy family. A Navy brat. So my experience as a young kid is moving every 3 to 5 years. A family of seven, my mom would close up a house, we'd move, we'd get in a car, we'd drive across country. So from California to Illinois, then to Indiana. I mean, we made a lot of moves as a kid. I think that is one of my big life stories because in a family of seven, you kind of learn where you are. there are positives, and I won't call them negatives, but challenges that that also set me up for. That was probably one of the biggest things, because I was meeting, you know, admirals, I was meeting POWs. It was at a time when the country was really pulling together in ways. I'm older than you both, so it was just when the Vietnam vets were coming back from the war. So it was really an interesting time. My dad worked at a medical hospital, so he was processing a lot of them. So I was in a position at a very young age to meet a lot of different people. So I think that opened up my eyes to how big the world really was, and that there were so many different types of people out there. So I didn't grow up in one place. I was born in California, grew up in the Midwest, and then ended up as a Maryland transplant. But I think as far as life stories, the other biggest impact that I had for my life was when I worked for Sky Chefs, which is an airline catering company. Many people know it as LSG Sky Chefs today. But we were in a process of trying to figure out how to be profitable in a very declining industry. So our CEO put into place that we were going to do some lean manufacturing. Nobody really knew what that looked like. We certainly didn't. We hired the Thomas Group, which is known for total cycle time. We brought them in, and you know, if you do lean manufacturing, you're going to reduce headcount. And we did that. It was successful, but it was brutal. It was hard. It was not done the proper way. And our vice president of human resources said, we could do this better. So I was fortunate enough to be put on a team to where we looked at the training and the development of that particular program, which gives me my training and development program experience today. But also it gave me the operational background and knowledge to be able to walk into any place and look at the redundant or non-value added steps and look at the KPIs that go along with improving a process, but also to treat the people who are doing that process to get their input. That was the most important thing we learned, is that you work from the bottom up, and the people that are doing the work is the people that you talk to, or are the people that you talk to, and find out what they like or what they don't have. And we found they didn't have the information to do their job. They didn't have the materials to do their job. Things weren't on time. Same problems that a lot of people run into today. But by documenting it, putting it down, it was the production efficiency as well as the KPIs, the key performance indicators that we identified with the process that held us accountable for the results that we were getting. But we also did it in a way that treated everybody with dignity and respect. And I remember learning that at a very young age from my parents and my family. So I was taught, and that was reaffirmed, that whole learning that you treat everybody with respect, but if they don't have the tools, they don't have the access, you help them and get that to them. So we didn't just lay people off. We put them through severance plans. We helped them find a job. We gave them job retraining, which really wasn't heard of at a lot of other companies going through restructuring and downsizing. So I think, and I get pretty passionate when I talk about my role at Sky Chefs, because I also was able to have a number of different jobs, but we identified really high performing goals and the company really achieved that. But I think treating everybody with dignity and respect, getting them the information to do their job, giving them access to the information to do their job and the ability to do that goes along with so many of the things that the world is dealing with today and DEI and things like that. We all deserve the right chance, and we all deserve the respect of each other to get us to a point that we should be competitive with each other.
I know. That was amazing.
That's a lot. I know.
No, that was a keynote, right? That was a mini keynote. Because you brought it from your experience growing up to some of the skills and the ideas that carry you in today. And again, as Director of Entrepreneurial Services at BW Tech, which includes working with BW Tech North Campus and South Campus, the amount of government relations, the amount of government business contracts, and overall just revenue generation that happens within that ecosystem, you're uniquely qualified to excel in it. So the thing I wanted to understand is, again, you growing up in a Navy family, a military family, I thank your father and your entire family for their service. And us living in Maryland, people listening to this that might be stationed, whether it's in the United States or abroad, what are some of the skills that that person trying to rank up might not realize that when I come back home, I can take these skills and build a business, whether it's in a specific trade or it's building a specific product. Could you highlight again on some of those transferable skills that our servicemen can bring into the market.
Sure, that's terrific. Our service people are probably the youngest, most talented people that we have, and many more kids should go into the service because the training that you receive is just that. It's training that will set you up for the rest of your life. I constantly am amazed about being in Maryland and how many people are military families here. That's exciting to me. And you know, we have so many kids that are looking for that family, that team environment, and they can find it in the military. So I am a big proponent of, if you're not sure where you want to go or if you want to get free education and training, that is the place to go. But I've also talked to a lot of vets and people coming back, and they have a hard time transferring those skills from the military to civilian life. And I think the biggest issue is when they learn their jobs, just as we do in entrepreneurship or our particular areas of expertise, we learn all the acronyms, we learn all the cool little words that you have as far as pitch contests and funding and operations and this and that. They learn the same exact thing. They have to have a budget. They have to know that things run on time, and they probably run better than what we do with zero defects, but high quality, but they just call things differently. So I have talked to a lot of them, and I coach them at changing those acronyms, but getting to understand the industry terminology and applying that knowledge to their resumes, to the interviews, to the way that they present themselves, that it's the same information. It's just called something different. Same thing with stay-at-home individuals. I can't say it's all moms anymore. A stay-at-home mom and dads have such a hard job running a household, managing all the school's events, the kids' events, the soccer games, things like that. They're running a mini business out of their house, and they just have to understand that it's very similar. But those vets coming out, as well as those stay-at-home individuals, really have some strong applicable skills to what we're looking for. And we have a major gap in the job market today. So we are looking for qualified people to come in and help out in so many different jobs. So whether it's IT, data processing, finance, operations, food service, laundry, I mean, they are running huge organizations. And the hard part for them is that they're going to have to almost come down to a smaller aspect of that job and that corporation by joining a Maryland type company, if that makes sense.
And I definitely get that, Marty, and I appreciate you mentioning for our servicemen and women and everybody coming out, the young, you know, men and women that are serving in our military, right? Mm-hmm. I think that it's important to know that some of the transferable skills also, to your point about having a family, if you're a stay-at-home mom or dad, if you're the spouse of, you know, somebody that's in the service, family managers are something that some high net worth individuals and families have, but that's a job that, you know, literally you take care of the household for them, right? Yep. And to your point, like, we do that as regular individuals. Again, we don't get paid for it outside of what we do, but that's kind of, you know, there are options available if you're talking about transferable skills or if you're good with logistics, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I did want to touch on one question that we have before we move into our next segment, because we are on time. With the experience that you have now, right? If you had to start over to achieve what goals you currently have, I know you said you're very happy with your job, but what would you do in this current climate, knowing all the things that we have to face today, barring politics and all that, but just strictly talking about economy, job prospects and opportunities and international changes that are happening. How would you navigate if you were in our shoes or as a young, you know, professional coming out looking to do what they want to do?
Yeah, that is a great question. For me personally, it would probably, and this sounds odd, it would have been improving my math skills, because I think moving around a lot, I never really got the baseline foundation for math. And because math is in everything that we do, both at home and at work, luckily I had a really good CFO who picked me out and put me on a budget process, and it led to mergers and acquisitions. So I was taught it at an older age. But today, I think the most important thing for kids to learn is the adaptability of technology. And there are so many things that are going to be changing. Math is definitely one of them. I would definitely work on improving my math, because I would have loved to have gone into space probably. And you can't do that without math, but you also can't do that without technology. And again, I keep talking about how old I am, but when I was going to school, I kind of missed that gap of no computers in college, to the point that they were doing DOS computer work way back in the day, when they would push that little paper in and get the dots on it. And I didn't have to do that. I missed that. So I have grown up with computers. Luckily, you should see my dad. My dad is an Apple fan, has been since they came out. He's been a fan of the technology. So the adaptability on technology has got to be there. But I think for kids, I mean, I have friends with two-year-olds, and you know, you see them working iPads and phones better than I do. And it's really scary that they can even get into it with passwords. So, you know, I think kids are adapting differently than what I ever did. And that's going to be a big change, is adaptability. But I would definitely work on my math skills. But today's kids, I think they really need to be aware of the technology and what's going on behind that technology, and constantly being able to think two steps ahead of what that technology is going to be like in their lifetime. Because again, I grew up with no computers, and look at us today. So kids today have got to think a little bit differently to make sure that they're still relevant in the job market in the future.
Yeah. And I just want to jump in with a recent announcement. EA, Electronic Arts, you know, multi-billion dollar media outlet, has just released in an announcement a new text to game, entire AI engine. So imagine, you know, the LAN parties, you know, as we were growing up, whether it's Xbox or before that, people are able to be in a party, be on a Zoom call, and say, I want to create a game that looks like we're in the Amazon. And it's a rule-based, based on how fast we can ride on a skateboard. And we're talking photorealistic, as if it's a $70 game. This is now the future that our kids are able to live in. And I'm jealous.
You're seeing it firsthand. I mean, if you think about Star Trek and Star Wars, I mean, they would walk into those hologram rooms and there became the landscape. That's not too far off from our future. I think we're going to see some really cool things and some really challenging things. But I'll look forward to learning more about that one.
Oh, interesting. And I know that you mentioned it, and I'm going to segue real quick. Mm-hmm. Speaking about new tech and the adaptability of technology, or at least people to the new tech that's coming about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit, and based on, you know, your experience working with technology as it has emerged and kind of blossomed into, you know, what it is today with AI in the forefront of that. What kind of new tech have you discovered along the way that you feel has been very transformative? And then also, what tech have you discovered today in your current role and position, whether it be, you know, domestically or abroad, that you feel is going to affect us in the future based on, you know, whatever aspect of life that may be?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. So I really believe that ChatGPT is something that has helped me save a ton of time with emails, letters, information that I'm trying to share out, marketing information. It's even helped myself in my communication, being a little bit more succinct and clear in some of the things that we're driving at work. So I think that was, ChatGPT can be a terrific resource in many, many things. On the other hand, futuristic, I don't think you and I, the three of us, really understand everything that AI is today. I think we have an idea of what it could or should be, but we have a lot of companies saying they're providing AI, and really they're scraping the web, they're gathering information. They're not writing the bots that are actually thinking, doing, and challenging the work that's being done. But I think AI is definitely a wave of the future that I'm not really sure that I know enough about, but I think that's going to be the next level of things, as well as with marketing. I mean, if you remember Minority Report, when Tom Cruise walks into a Gap or something, and there's a hologram of him, and it's talking to him about his next choices, all of the stuff from those kind of movies, we didn't think about when those movies came out. We thought that was very futuristic, and we're this close to it. And I think AI is going to be doing a lot more. It's probably doing a lot more that we're not really aware of. And that's at the military, the DOD level. And we're just starting to see our level of understanding. And then the last part is sensors. I think we've all seen some amazing things that sensors are going to be able to do that help us in our jobs, construction workers, medical individuals. And sensors are really becoming a true thing to help us determine our health, but also to determine if we're safe on a work site or what's around us. We already have it to determine what's around our house or our Ring doorbell, but I think there are other sensors that we're going to be using in algorithmic kind of ways that is going to be really transformative in the future.
So we're not talking censorship here. It's more so just how do you describe that? What are you talking about specifically for our audience, just so that we're clear?
For the AI or the sensors?
Censorship. for the sensors, yeah, that you're talking about. Censors. I think censorship when you mentioned that, so that's why I asked.
No, sorry about the sensors that actually you put in a glove or on your hand or on your body or in your shirt that can detect your body, heartbeat, your range of motion.
Medical devices and such.
Okay. They're also using it on construction zones to make sure people are safe. They're not getting too close to a vehicle so they get run over. There's a lot of safety aspects to it that are being developed right now. So sensors.
Okay, cool. No, seismic sensors, stuff like that. Okay. No, I get it now. I just wanted to be clear because as soon as you said that, I was like, okay. But then you were describing the use cases and I was like, all right, so not censorship. But then you went to like AI and I was like, okay, well, we're back here now. So Michael.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, I even know smart cities, they've implemented weight pressure plates within like right in front of, you know, red lights to be able to see. That's something that's 20, 30 years old. So you can only imagine, you know, when you're complaining about, oh, I can't drive right now because it's a red light. But, you know, this person just went like three times. So, yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, I remember my uncle used to live in Maryland and he worked at NSA. And as kids, we would say, what do you do? What do you do? And he's like, yeah, I can't tell you. If I did, I'd have to kill you because it's classified. But now in his older years, he's like, yeah, everything I worked on is in the museum. And it was GPS. I mean, so he was one of the people that actually got to work on something that I could not have even fathomed as a kid, but look how far that's come. So, you know, our military, our Department of Defense, our NSA, NASA, I mean, they're all working on such amazing things. And eventually the public will be able to take advantage of all that innovation and technology. So that's kind of where I think things are going. I think once it gets into our hands, we'll be able to really flourish with it.
So you've heard tech, you've heard business, you've heard adopting a people first mindset from Margie, and we can't think of a better person to help share these nuggets of information with everyone here. And we want to thank you and be sure to be tuned for those listening. We'll have an amazing part two coming soon. But thank you, Margie. Thanks, Alaire. We'll chat soon.
Thank you.